International Edition. Coming up, Muslims worldwide set to begin Ramadan.
When you go without food and drink for an entire day, even for one day, you realize what you've given up, and you realize what you actually had that you had taken for granted.
Civilians in Ukraine cope with a battle for hearts and minds. New worries over robots. Some female pop stars keep turning out the music. These stories and more just ahead. I'm Ray Kugel. Muslims around the world are preparing for the start of Ramadan, a month of intense prayer and fasting. After sighting the new crescent moon, religious authorities in Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Iran, Indonesia, and most other parts of the world announced the holy month would begin today. In Pakistan, officials ordered the fasting to begin Friday. During Ramadan, observant Muslims abstain from eating and drinking from sunrise to sunset for the entire month. President Obama extended warmest greetings to all those observing the month of fasting in the United States and around the world. VOA's Michael Sullivan visited a mosque near Los Angeles to learn why American Muslims view the month as special.
Midday prayers are underway at the Islamic Society of Orange County, a multicultural mosque in a multi-ethnic neighborhood of Southern California. Preparations are also underway for the thousands expected for the first Saturday of Ramadan, a large celebration at this mosque. A huge canopy is being erected in the courtyard. The Islamic lunar month is a time of fasting during daylight hours with a focus on the Islamic holy scripture, the Quran. Ramadan teaches self-discipline and helps Muslims count their blessings, says the director of education from a neighboring mosque who delivered today's sermon, Sheikh Mustafa Umar.
When you go without food and drink for an entire day, even for one day, you realize what you've given up and you realize what you actually had that you had taken for granted.
Members of this mosque prepare for a busy schedule, including evening celebrations after the fast is broken. Dua Alwan is president of the Islamic Society of Orange County.
Every day here at the mosque, we actually break our fast together at sunset, so that's around 8 p.m. There is free meals, free dinners here. A lot of the community and the larger community are invited to that. A lot of our friends from different faiths, our neighbors.
People share a meal, and the food, like the community, is diverse.
You have Pakistani food, you have Indian food, you have Middle Eastern, you have Italian food, you have Mexican food, and it really reflects, you know, the diversity that our community shares.
After eating, there is more prayer. Mosque member Nawaz Ahmed says this is a time for resolutions to live a better life.
Kind of like a New Year's for us, where all the things that we're supposed to do, kind of start going strong and doing them, and the things that we are doing, we continue them and do it as a community and a group.
Old acquaintances are renewed and community bonds are strengthened. Sheikh Mustafa Umar says it is a pattern repeated throughout the Muslim world with minor variations.
So it's kind of a mixture of, worshiping God and also having fun and having a good time and realizing and appreciating the blessings that you have in this life.
Members of this mosque say there is excitement in the air, as there is every year at the start of Ramadan. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
The social media world is no doubt marking the start of Ramadan. Michael Lippin is here with me to tell us what's happening.
Hi, Ray. That's right. As you can imagine, Ramadan is one of the biggest topics on Twitter right now. Twitter says it's among the top five trending topics in both the United States and worldwide. The Topsy Analytics site shows that the word Ramadan itself has been tweeted more than 300,000 times in the last 24 hours as the month-long festival gets underway. Many users around the world have been sending out the traditional greeting, Ramadan Mubarak. Those tweets have come from the likes of Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper, U.S. Senator Al Franken, and Scottish recording artist Emily Sande. Twitter also is in a festive mood. It has an account called @TwitterFaith, which posts religious-related tweets from across the globe. And on Wednesday, it posted a tweet showing how users can celebrate the spirit of Ramadan with Ramadan, Eid, and Iftar hash flags.
Hash flags? That's an interesting word. What's a hash flag?
Right. Well, for those who don't know much about that term, it is a little graphic or icon marking a special occasion or event. And when Twitter enables a hash flag for such an occasion, the graphic will automatically appear in your published tweet if you type the associated hashtag. So, for example, if you type the hashtag Ramadan, a little icon of a crescent moon will pop up right next to the word Ramadan. The hash flag for Eid, that's the holiday of Eid al-Fitr, marking the end of Ramadan, is an icon of the traditional Eid greeting in Arabic script. And the hash flag for iftar, the name of the evening meal that ends the daily Ramadan fast, is perhaps appropriately an icon of a cup of water. Ray?
Thank you, Michael. You're listening to VOA's International Edition.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, the host for Jazz America, where each week we give you the best of jazz past and present and conversation with the music makers. You can hear the program online at voanews.com and on the air on VOA each Saturday and Sunday at 13 hours Universal Time. Join me for Jazz America and help me celebrate the greatness of a century of jazz. Listen at 13 hours Universal Time, Saturdays and Sundays, on voanews.com and the Voice of America.
European Union governments have reached preliminary agreement to extend sanctions against Russia for 6 months for its role in the Ukraine crisis, triggering Kremlin warnings that Moscow will retaliate. EU envoys reached a decision in Brussels Wednesday and is expected to be formally adopted in a meeting of the bloc's 28 foreign ministers in Luxembourg next week. A Kremlin spokesman said Moscow will formally respond to the extension once it is formalized. War-weary civilians in eastern Ukraine have been caught in the crossfire as periodic ceasefire violations continue. In areas held by Russia-backed rebels, many tend to blame authorities in Kiev, but most seem more interested in peace than breaking away from Ukraine. As we hear from VOA's Daniel Scharf in rebel-held Donetsk, even if peace is eventually established, winning back the population's hearts and minds is going to be a real challenge.
As she laid down to sleep, Donetsk resident Yekaterina says something woke her, and then suddenly in the hallway, there was a loud boom. She says who knows where it came from, as shells often fly back and forth. But luckily, nobody was hurt.
How can I stay alive? How can I survive in this small house? I do not have any basement. I cannot run to the summer kitchen because I am old.
A nearby market was also hit and still smoldering after firefighters stopped the damage from spreading. Residents of this area north of Donetsk's train station say shells fall here almost every night. But those who remain, like Yekaterina, feel their best option is to stay.
I am ready to sit hungry, as long as they don't shoot. I want to die my own death, but not under this bombardment, not under this fear that flies in the sky.
In another neighborhood, some choose to sleep underground in a makeshift bomb shelter. Baba Masha and her family have been living here since November when a shell hit their neighbor's house and the shockwave blew out their windows.
I really hope we will soon go back home. If the war had not happened, we would live in this damaged place.
Ira Batura says they have had as many as 28 children living in the bunker and sometimes lose water and electricity.
We were told there is no truce anymore, that it was completely broken. We are simply sitting here, scared, without knowing what is going to happen next.
While Kiev and Western governments say Russia is fueling the conflict, Batura says President Petro Poroshenko is responsible. She questions if they can ever trust authorities in Kiev.
What kind of trust can it be? What kind of state? It has been broken. There is no state anymore. I doubt someone will put it back together. And how can they put it together if people are already cursing him?
But Batura says they are not against being part of Ukraine, as long as there is a lasting political solution.
If they do it in a peaceful way and stop the firing and the war, then people will accept this.
And while life goes on, the immediate prospects for peace do not look good. Daniel Sheriff, VOA News, Donetsk.
A tiger that escaped a flood-ridden zoo in Georgia's capital, Tbilisi, was shot dead by police after it attacked and killed a man on Wednesday. The animal was one of several to break free from enclosures at Tbilisi Zoo several days ago following severe flooding. Zoo officials have come under fire for announcing earlier this week that all the animals were accounted for. The zoo director acknowledged he was to blame for releasing faulty information and said new counts indicated a tiger cub and a hyena could still be on the loose. The city has remained on edge with runaway predators reportedly seen by some residents. The zoo administration says 8 lions, 7 tigers, at least 2 of its 3 jaguars, and 12 of 14 bears were killed in the flooding. Coming up, U.S. television ratings soar for the NBA Finals.
From the ordinary to the extraordinary, you never know what in the world will happen next.
The world is watching with grave concern as Russia has positioned its military.
You should not allow anyone to deprive you of your right to determine the future.
We are using this against terrorist groups coming from Turkey.
With the landing of
and
civilians.
Sponsored by, no, we are not killing civilians.
This with is all that's happening, VOA News works to keep you up to date every hour of every day. So when you want to know what's new, you know what to do. Tune in your radio or click on the internet. World News on the hour, every hour, or at your convenience at voanews.com.
Robots are not human, but they sure act like it. They can do lots of things for us. The wonders of technology make it all happen. Is it good or is it bad? Here's VOA's Susan Yockey.
There is an old Saturday night comedy sketch about how old people in the future should buy robot insurance. They warn that the robots are strong and can get mean and may attack their owners. Well, the thought of needing robot insurance is pretty funny, but not so fast. Some people are concerned about the effects of the robot era. Editor Gideon Rose, in the introduction to the next issue of Foreign Affairs, considers what the future will bring, and he joins us on the line. Hello, Mr. Rose.
Good to be here.
Thank you, thank you. What do we have to worry about? Do we all need robot insurance?
Well, it's not a question of worry. The technology has always changed work and life, and it seems pretty clear that we're going through another phase, another shift of that with automation and robotics and artificial intelligence. And so the real question is, what benefits is that shift going to bring, and what are the downsides that it's going to bring, and how do we, as a society, as individuals, deal with it?
Well, I guess the benefits we can all guess, you know, more efficient, less work, but less work also means less jobs. What are the bad sides?
Well, this is an interesting question. So there's certainly less work for some people, but the question that's really up in the air is whether there will be less work total. Let's take driverless cars. Obviously, people who currently drive cars for a living are going to be out of a job. And if there are fewer accidents, then there are going to be fewer mechanics needed. So that's going to be good for people who want to get places and good for people who want to be safe, but bad for people who drive cars and bad for people who fix cars. On the other hand, the really interesting question we don't know about is, will the advances and efficiencies that come from driverless cars end up generating so much more demand and so much more interesting jobs that the overall economy will benefit and the overall amount of jobs will increase for humans, even if some individual people and industries lose out?
Well, being a human myself, I have to think that I have some qualities that a machine doesn't have. What do humans have that robots don't?
We have some great pieces in the package on this. One of the things that humans have is they have the ability to communicate very easily. They have the ability to size up new situations. They have the ability to do pattern recognition. They can learn. And there are a lot of things that humans are better at than machines, at least for now. They're also in charge of the overall economy and the political system. So if humans band together, they can prevent themselves from being made obsolete. Right now, the Democratic Party is trying to block a free trade deal because its unionized laborers don't want to lose jobs, and they can basically sort of make everything grind to a halt. So you could imagine a situation in which there are political blockages to moving into this new robotic future, as well as economic ones.
It seems like the technology is really moving along fast.
It definitely does seem like things are shooting forward quickly, and in many respects they are. But what we tend to take for granted is how quickly things shot forward in the past. One of my favorite pieces in the issue is by Martin Wolf of the Financial Times, who's kind of a curmudgeonly skeptic of all this. And his point is that although there are indeed changes that are occurring now, these changes pale in comparison to what used to happen. And so the overall picture, truly, in historical perspective, is of things being relatively modestly changing. So, for example, he says, driverless cars, that's cool, certainly. But you know what's really cool? Cars themselves. So the shift going from no cars to cars is a hell of a lot bigger than the shift from going from our driving cars to a car that drives itself.
Well, just to remind our listeners, the article will be in the next edition of Foreign Affairs. That's the July issue, right?
Yep, July, August, Foreign Affairs on newsstands pretty soon, and it's a great issue, lots of great stuff in it.
Foreign Affairs magazine editor Gideon Rose speaking with VOA's Susan Yockey.
From science and technology, here's what's new.
What's new is a medical test called VIRSCAN. This test, with just one drop of blood, can identify every virus you've ever been infected with. Everyone. Stephen Ellidge is with the Howard Hughes Medical Institute.
We were able to learn how your immune system recognizes viruses.
VIRSCAN could someday help doctors diagnose what ails you and reveal more about how viruses impact your long-term health.
We can look at viruses and how they differ between populations of people or people who have different diseases and whether or not a particular virus might cause that disease.
VIRSCAN was tested on 569 people from four continents known to be infected with particular viruses. It identified an average of 10 different species of viruses per person, but some of these folks had been exposed to up to 84 varieties of viruses. This test is not yet commercially available, but should be in the not-too-distant future. For VOA's What's New, I'm Todd Grosson.
The Golden State Warriors are the new champions of the National Basketball Association, defeating the Cleveland Cavaliers 4-2 in the best-of-7 finals. Game 6 ended with a 105-97 score in Cleveland, which had hoped local hero LeBron James could bring a long-awaited title to the city. Instead, NBA regular season MVP Stephen Curry and his teammates are taking the trophy back to California. There was tremendous interest among American sports fans, with extremely large audiences watching on television. VOA's Jim Stevenson spoke with Max Willens, who writes for the International Business Times, about the tune-in factor.
The NBA Finals concluded Tuesday night, and the following morning, Nielsen passed ESPN and ABC what are called overnight ratings, which look at how many people were tuned in the majority of the U.S. market. And based on those numbers, this year's NBA Finals averaged a rating of 13.9, which is going to make this year's Finals the most widely watched NBA Finals since Michael Jordan was destroying anything and everything that got in his way back in the 90s.
Wow, those are some amazing numbers. What made this Finals so popular?
The joke used to be that the then NBA Commissioner David Stern would hope and pray for two big market teams to wind up in the finals, because if you have teams that are followed and rooted for by people living in markets like New York or Los Angeles, then you're going to automatically have a nice big foundation of eyeballs to base your numbers on. But I think that the success that you're seeing this year has more to do with just the transcendent appeal of a guy like LeBron James and a really wonderful team game that you see in a team like the Golden State Warriors. Obviously, San Francisco, where the Warriors are based, is a pretty big media market. It's the sixth biggest in the United States, but Cleveland is not terribly large. It's the 19th largest. And what you're really seeing is a lot of people interested in whether LeBron James, who has cemented his status as, you know, one of the 10 or 15 biggest players in NBA history, whether he could deliver something that Cleveland has been waiting 50 years for, and that's a pro sports championship.
And Golden State itself erasing quite a long drought.
That's exactly right. I mean, everyone spends a lot of time talking about how much agony and how long Cleveland has had to wait for a championship. But if you're a diehard Warriors fan, you've been waiting 40 years. That was the last time the Golden State Warriors won a title was in 1975. And so this has been a long time coming for that fan base as well.
Things have changed quite a bit since Michael Jordan's day, at least in the way that people can follow the NBA now. There's so many different ways besides just watching it on TV, and that must have helped the numbers a little bit.
Yeah, that's a really good point, I think. The NBA was one of the first North American sports leagues to really embrace the opportunity afforded by things like social media and platforms like YouTube. It's funny to think about now, but in the early days when YouTube was first sort of ascendant and becoming a thing that people looked to for video entertainment and content all the time, a lot of sports leagues were very resistant, even hostile to YouTube. They would ban anybody from uploading footage of games or content related to it. But the NBA went the other way, and they said, wait a second, this is a great opportunity to promote our product and to get people talking about it on a daily basis. And that's why, at this point, the NBA is just leaps and bounds ahead of most other American sports leagues in terms of its social media presence. And they're also, they've been smart about making their content digitally available too. This past game of the NBA Finals was watched by nearly 1 million people on the Watch ESPN app, which I think embraces of digital as a place for people to consume their product.
Max Willens is writer for the International Business Times. He spoke with VOA's Jim Stevenson. Two well-known female singers are back with new music and are sure to excite their fans and gain new audiences. David Byrd and Shona Renee drop into the studio to sing their praises.
Multiple Grammy winner Jill Scott has a new album and a new tour, and Miss Jackson is set to hit the road with her new compositions. I'm David Byrd. We're talking with Shona Renee about Jill Scott. Let's talk Jill Scott first. Philadelphia native, beautiful, soulful, rich kind of voice. Got a new album out called Woman.
Yeah, incredible artist. She right now, I think, is the face of this neo-soul movement. Even though, according to what I've read, this new album, Woman, is a departure from what we're used to hearing from Jill. She described it as classic Philly soul, which we've come to expect from her, meets country rhythm served with captivating storytelling. Again, something that we are used to, but the country rhythm I thought was a very interesting change and a shift for her. And then I also know that if the song we heard a while ago, You Don't Know, is any indication of what we might hear, there's a lot of classic blues influence in her new music as well, which is all very exciting. I can't wait.
Did you ever know what it is to be hurt? Did you ever feel like dirt? Did you ever give up?
Pain song.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You feel it. Like when, and even when you see her perform it, you know that on some level, she feels it as well. And she's been very honest about what she's gone through in her personal life, and it always comes out in her music. And I think that's part of that captivating storytelling that she's always been known for and that we'll hear more of.
And she's touring to support this album, too, which I understand some of the dates, they're already don't even bother trying to get tickets.
Oh, absolutely. It's been a while since we've seen seen her on a full tour. And fans of Jill Scott know that you really can't experience her fullness until you do it live. You have to see her be there and feel the music all around you. So, yeah, those who are lucky enough to get in early will have quite a show to enjoy.
Now, speaking of touring, I understand that Janet Jackson is going to go on tour in a couple of months. She's got a new album coming out. It's been 7 years since she put out an album?
It's been 7 years since she's put out an album. She hasn't toured since 2011. She's kind of been doing her own thing. She recently got married, and she's been living over in the Middle East, well, between there and here in the United States, and everyone was wondering whether or not she would ever come back to music. And she kept putting out little bits and pieces on social media saying, I'm coming, I've got stuff. But now we have the official announcement. There will be a new album, and there will be a full world tour to support that project coming up starting in mid to late August.
All right, that's Shauna Renee. You can hit Shauna up at @VOA_music. You can also listen for her in the Soul Lounge. You can find the link to that on our website. That's voanews.com.
I was chasing fool's gold.
That's it for this edition of International Edition. Be sure to visit our website at voanews.com for much more news and information. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ray Kugel. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
When the magnitude 7.8 earthquake struck central Nepal on April 25th, Sita Shrestha knew what to do. She found a place near an inner wall of her house to wait out the shaking with her five-month-old daughter and told her six-year-old son, who was on a different floor, to do the same. When the shaking stopped, Sita grabbed her go-to bag, a disaster preparedness kit, and took her children to a safe open space in the courtyard. Using the tarpaulin from the go bag, she made an emergency shelter for her family. She also used disinfectant from the kit to treat her children's wounds and passed out medicines to neighbors with headaches and other minor ailments. Additional supplies from the bag, including chlorine to purify water, a headlamp, soap, and toothpaste, proved invaluable in the days following the earthquake, according to Sita, who made use of every item in her kit. Sita attributes her capable response during and after the April 25th earthquake to a preparedness course she took in 2013, conducted by United States Agency for International Development partner, the National Society for Earthquake Technology, or NSET, an organization founded in Nepal. The NSET training taught Sita how to protect herself during an earthquake and the importance of having an emergency kit in her home, which NSET provided to course participants. Sita retained the knowledge gained from NSET and shared it with her family. But she did not fully realize the value of the go-to bag until the April 25th earthquake struck. I learned about the need to store the emergency kit from the training. I knew that the go bag was important and so have kept one myself. But I had not imagined that our go bag would be that useful in this situation. The training Sita received was a component of the larger USAID-funded Nepal Earthquake Risk Management Project, through which NSET coordinated long-term disaster risk reduction planning and worked with the government of Nepal, local schools, and committees like Sita's to increase earthquake awareness and preparedness. The United States is proud to partner with the government of Nepal to help the people of Nepal prepare best for the worst that nature can offer.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
for, what's